Ada yang lebih format per non-division from parampara, pana tokan. And you've got 9 marks for flow and expression. Then you've got very good marks for faith in variance and precision, like that. So totally, you've got 71%. So it was a very wonderful presentation. We'll try to clarify briefly some of the questions which were left halfway. Actually, I prefer beginning from the reverse. Questions like the one which was given earlier by about the soul coming to the material world. We should be very clear about the souls in the spiritual world. There are many categories of souls in the spiritual world. Not all are saints. There are nitya siddha souls who are eternally living in the spiritual world. So they never come to the material world. Do you know that there is a category of souls like them? They never come to the material world. They always live in the spiritual world. Like Krishna's eternal associates like Radharani or the other Sakhis or Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj or like Sri Rama, Sudama, Madhumangal. These are all eternal associates of Krishna. Even if they come to the material world, they come only when Krishna calls them. And Krishna tells them, come, let us go and perform some pastimes. Then they come. And they go along with Krishna back to the spiritual world. So these are called as nitya siddhas. And there are also souls. So these are all nitya siddhas are coming in internal energy. They call it internal energy, antaranga shakti. But there are souls which are coming in the category of tatastha shakti. Tatastha means, tat means the bank of the river. Sometimes the bank of the river is wet by the water, sometimes it is dry. Similarly, we all are coming in tatastha shakti. So tatastha shakti souls, sometimes they can be in the material world, and sometimes in the spiritual world. But Krishna says that these souls in tatastha shakti, if they once become a devotee and return back to the spiritual world, then they will not come back again to the material world. So a question was raised that they still have the independence. Why will they not misuse their independence again and come back to the material world? You see, the period of the soul in the material world, it looks like a nightmare for him when he returns to the spiritual world. Because he has experienced unlimited sufferings in so many varieties of bodies, millions of bodies. But when he goes back, like we say in English, once bitten, twice shy. Sometimes the child is very eager to touch fire. But once he touches, he will never want to touch it for the second time. I was hearing the other day, there's a proverb in Hindi. It says, if you have ever drunk hot milk once, sometimes it's in a hot milk. You are not just saying? So later on, even if somebody gives you dahi, you never ever do that. In the same way, the soul has had enough experience in the material world of suffering. So he will never want to come again. And also the soul being full of knowledge, he doesn't forget his coming to the material world. He knows it's like a nightmare for him, like a dangerous dream that he had in his life. So he will never want to come back here. But he still maintains his independence. He has independence. But he always uses the independence in the right direction for all time to come, for eternity. So he becomes something like the nitya siddha souls who are eternally living there. That is why Srila Prabhupada used to say, somebody may be a bond millionaire. Somebody may have millions of rupees in the bank. Somebody must have worked very hard and ultimately he became a millionaire. Is there any difference between the two? Ultimately there is no difference. Because one was already a millionaire, one has become a millionaire by endeavoring. Similarly, we all are sadhana siddhas, sadhana bhaktas. So by sadhana bhakti, we will become a sadhana siddha. We will achieve siddhi. And we will also become like the nitya siddha souls in the spiritual world, never to return again to the material world. In Bhagavad Gita, at least you will find 5 or 6 shlokas talking about this particular thing, that you never return to the material world. Janma karma chana yajan, devam yoga tirasutaha. Tattvadeham punarjanna naiti mahameti sarjana. I said there are many shlokas. We never return back to the material world. Regarding the increase of population, most of it what Ajay said was correct. Just like he said about the 10th standard. 10th standard is a board examination. Many other people say Whereas in 7th, 8th, 9th, the school makes a part in terms of higher standard. Similarly, in the animal body, it is very easy to get higher bodies. In fact, it happens automatically. You go to the higher body. And you don't have to perform any good karma in animal body. In fact, animals have no karma. Animals have no good or bad karma. They are not punished or they are not rewarded. Whatever reward and punishment that you get in a human form of life is based on what you did in the previous human form, the last human form before which you fell down to the animal body. So animals have no karma at all. So automatically they are promoted. But when you come to human form of life, again, it is something like a junction of a road. You have to decide where to go. This way or that way or this way. You have to decide. But the animals act by instinct. No animal has any knowledge of the scriptures. Nor can they make a resolution or sankalpa. I will do this. No, I will take a vow of fasting and ekadashi. They cannot take such vows. They have no understanding of scriptures or dharma and all. Whereas in human form, you are endowed with a special ability to understand the atata of Brahma Jignasa. So, there are living beings who are coming from the spiritual world, falling down. So there are souls like us, like I was telling you just now, Tatastha Shakti, in the spiritual world, who have not yet tasted the material world till now. That means they stand a good chance to come. So they are coming down. But there are also souls who have come here and gone back. They will never return again. So there are some souls coming from the spiritual world. There are some souls coming from the heavenly planets, down to this Martyaloka. There are some souls which are being promoted from animal species to the human species. They are getting promoted. And some of the people are endeavoring in spiritual life, but they are becoming yoga brahmas. They are not perfecting their life, so they are again returning back to the human form of life. And especially those who are in mode of passion, it is said that they are again reborn as human beings repeatedly. So they are again born into the material world. So there are hundreds and thousands of ways by which people can become humans again. And besides that, with our limited brain, we cannot understand how many souls are there. We cannot make a count. We cannot make a balance sheet. This many souls are there, this many went back, this many went to heavenly planets. As you are telling rightly, the souls are present almost in every part of the universe. So the population that we are talking of is with the limited knowledge of this earthly planet. But there are many other planets in which there are living beings also. That is not the only planet. So we should understand that this population assessment that we are talking about is based on a limited perception. Even the animals, sometimes they say, this animal has become extinct. But how do you know? You have not even searched the entire earth. Have you gone to the entire earth? Have you gone to Arctic regions, Antarctic regions? Even in the other regions, you have not covered everything. If you go between Pune to Bombay, you will see there are so many areas which are dry land, empty, or marshy forest. So nobody knows what is existing there. So we have not excavated the entire earth. Even the process that we are talking of is some of the certain portions of earth. So, unfortunately, human beings have a very great confidence in their limited imperfect senses, because of which they think they know everything. We were discussing about the virus. Sometimes it appears as crystal, sometimes it exhibits consciousness. Virus is not the only thing. There are many other parasites also. When they are in touch with a living body, they appear to be living. They exhibit the symptoms of life. And when they are away from the living body, they just drop down dead. Again, when they come in contact with the living body, they show symptoms of life. So the question is, what do you consider to be symptom of life? That's the question. A very fundamental question. Do you consider movement from one place to another symptom of life? If you say so, then plants have no life. Isn't it? That's what the scientists considered once upon a time. Because plants don't move, they don't have life, they said. But later on it was understood plants have life. In fact, the scriptures explain there are even rocks, not all the rocks, some big mountains in which there are souls present. You have seen in South India there is a statue of, there is a deity of Hanuman, which has now grown almost up to double the size now. Sushindram, no? So you see, it has gone, it has broken the ceiling. It has grown so big now. So some stones grow. And the scriptures also explain that in some mountains, there are souls present. And afterwards, when the souls leave, it doesn't grow. Similarly, if you see a tree, But the soul presents in the body of the tree. And after the soul leaves, you will see that the tree is drying. You can put any amount of chemicals in the tree to bring it back to life. It won't do. Like, for example, if you take a tree, you cut it down up to the stem and you leave it, you will see that it is growing again. Is it not? Because the soul is still present in there. Just like you may lose a hand or you may lose a finger, still you survive. So you will again continue to grow. Similarly, the tree is growing. Whereas when the soul leaves the tree, then with any amount of manipulation, the tree cannot grow, nor can it give out some green leaves. It is impossible. In the same way, the symptom of life is not properly understood by the even the most educated man, even the people in the field of medicine. How do you define death and how do you define life? They don't have a proper answer. If you talk of death, like some people say clinical death, somebody will be clinically dead, but then you take him to the graveyard, he jumps up and comes back. Somebody, they say, his heartbeat has stopped. Or they say some people have brain death. Some people say, oh, this person has gone to comatose stage, so that means he is dead. They start taking out parts of his body, do you know that? When somebody is in comatose stage for 15 or 20 days, they call him a vegetable, and they start taking some parts of his body, like kidney, heart, and different things, and using it for different purposes. So, the person in comatose stage still has not died. There is a soul present even then. Still, there is a soul present in the body. But the doctor sometimes thinks, oh, this person is finished now. So how do we define life and how do we define death? So you may say this virus, the DNA crystal, it has no life. But how do you know there is no soul in that? Just because the particular body does not exhibit consciousness does not make it dead. The consciousness can be suppressed in a living being. It's possible. Like I was telling you about the stone. If you pinch a stone, only your finger will pain. Isn't it? If you go to a mountain and pinch it, will it experience pain? You will experience pain. But does it mean that there is no soul in that? There are five levels of consciousness, beginning from avrita chetana. Avrita chetana means covered consciousness. Like if you see a whale, you know, a whale in an ocean sometimes, it just stays stagnant. Once upon a time, a few people were sailing in a ship. They thought there is a big island available, let us get on. It's a small patch of land, let us stay here for some time. They stayed there for half a day. Afterwards, the island started moving. And they realized it is a whale. It's a big whale whose body was like several feet long. So in avrita chetana, the consciousness is so dumb that the person doesn't feel any experience at all through the skin. Like you see a buffalo. You pinch a buffalo, only your finger will pain. Is it? Or you kick him. Your knees will pain. Because his consciousness is very, very low. In the same way, there are living bodies which apparently exhibit no consciousness, but it doesn't mean that there is no soul in that. So, consciousness is one of the aspects of the presence of soul. That is why with science we may come to wrong conclusions because of our speculative studies. So we should understand based on the Shastra. One time, some scientists took a cockroach to conduct a test. So, this person would test the cockroach. He would shout aloud and the cockroach would move around. And this thing was testing, then he plucked out two legs. And then he shouted aloud again. It was slowly moving. And this thing he plucked out 2 by 2 all the legs. After he plucked out all the 8 legs, then he shouted loud in his ears. And the cockroach didn't move. Then the scientist concluded, when you pluck out all the legs of the cockroach is dead. This is the way scientists conclude, arrive at the truth. He has no ability to move because he plucked out all his legs. This is speculation. But our understanding of the soul and the body should be based on the scriptures. The scriptures very clearly talk about life and death. There is no ambiguity. As far as artificial intelligence is concerned, very unfortunately, scientists use terms by which they allure the minds of innocent people. They use such words. This is called as political maneuvering of words. Then you use attractive words, like you don't call slaughterhouse. When you say slaughterhouse, it means that it is a place where the animals are killed, the flesh is eaten by human beings along with their blood. So it looks a very horrible, ghastly word. So instead of calling it a slaughterhouse, they call it meat packing shop. In India, they call it as Kalika Mandir. There is a mandir, it appears to be a very nice word. They call it Kalika Mandir in India. So the word, they use word jugglery by which they give a view as if it is a very innocent thing. And they don't call it abortion nowadays. They call it a tissue termination, pregnancy termination. So when the mothers go to the hospital, they think, so I'm just going to terminate my tissue, some tissue in the stomach, isn't it? So they call this child a tissue, but how the child dies a miserable death? When the tube goes inside, the child withdraws himself inside, even when he is in the stomach of flesh. So the child is fearful that I'm going to be killed now. So they kill it and they call it tissue termination. So later on when they feel listen to the old men, they may say, let us terminate this old tissue. So they can do that. Whomever you don't like, you call them as a tissue and you terminate them. In the same way, scientists use word jugglery in order to do some nonsensical activity and cover it up with in a very beautiful way. In the same way, they call it as festive babies. And you think as if you are having some pitiful burette in which some babies are born. Actually, even a testy baby is born only in the stomach. The conditions within the womb of the mother are so difficult to simulate. The pressure, volume, temperature conditions. So, some female may be barren, but they have a facility to impregnate through other means, by which they produce a child. And they give peculiar terms like this. So, when artificial intelligence appears, as if scientists have created some intelligence, which was not existing before. And you start thinking, probably the robots are behaving with some special intelligence, which they have. Please understand, this is nothing but intelligence of many human beings assembled at one place. I was telling one example from classes before, just like you have the expert systems, which is a forming a part of artificial intelligence. Like when we were in our college days, one of our classmates, he did an expert system on automobile mechanism. So what do they do in automobile mechanism? When you take a bike, it has so many varieties of problems. So they call about 20 engineers, automobile engineers, and they all sit in a round table. And one by one they all propose the problems and they propose the solutions. And then everything is simulated, everything is put together, assembled, and pulled up, and then they put it in the expert systems. So now when you open the computer will first ask you, you have a problem in the bike, check the spark plug. You have to check the spark plug. And then you have to say whether it is all right, whether a particular term is particular thing is all right. If you say all right, then you go to the next problem. If you say it's not all right, then it will say, now you click this, and then you can go into the varieties of problems within the engine. So what greatness is born in such a package? There is nothing to wonder in this. It is after all, knowledge assembled from various resources. It's human knowledge assembled from various resources which is put in a computer, just like a data bank or like an encyclopedia, which you refer to and you find out. And this they call it a special intelligence. There is no intelligence at all. Like even the chess game or the other card games, all these things, these are all knowledge of different people which has been put in the computer over a period of time. It appears as if the computer is playing. In fact, human beings are playing through the computer. Just like the material body has no ability to move by itself. But me, the soul, I am moving this body by being inside. So really people's intelligence are working through the computer and we think the computer is working. It's all actually a some total of intelligence of various people. At any point of time, you will never be able to bring about emotions in a machine. We give a very beautiful example in the medical field. If you pinch a person, or if you prick a person with a needle, you can write a set of happenings that take place in his body. Like, you know, when you prick, there is an electrical secretion, there is a passage of electricity through the nerves in the body, it goes to the neuronal cells. All these things can be written down. These are called physical descriptions of the process that is taking place. But at the last point, the question is, who is the perceiver of the pleasure or pain? That you will not be able to answer. The robot can make the robot looking like a human being. You can give him a face, you can give him hands, you can give him legs. You can do everything. For that matter, I was seeing a robot performing a beautiful arati in the television they showed some 6 or 7 years ago. So he was performing an arati to Radha Krishna. Is there any emotion when he's performing? It is taking the agarbatti, is taking gila. How easy it is to understand? He doesn't have any emotions at all. Whereas in our altar you see a pujari performing arti itu Radha Krishna. Is it the body performing arti? Is it the head, the body performing? So what is performing arti? It is the soul which is performing arti. And all the things are lumps of matter which is covering the soul. So the actual personality is performing arti is the soul, is the real person. So these people are manipulating matter, they are having servo motors in different directions, X, Y, Z, and three angles of rotation. You combine all these things along with the micro structure, anybody can do this. What is the wonder? There is no life, there is no emotion. Like if I glorify one of you, if I glorify Shiran, if I glorify Shiran, Shiran is a very intelligent boy. What do you observe in Shiran? You observe a smile. Or if I appreciate Ajay, Ajay gave us a wonderful class. Simply he feels pleasure inside. And even all of you can see him feeling pleasure through the manifestation of his smile on his face. Is it not? So this is the living body. Living body has emotions. He catches someone and immediately he sees that he is a frowning face. He glorifies someone and he has a smiling face. Any living body, you can see that. What is because of a human being, even an animal, even a cat or a dog, even they have emotions, you can see that. Even plants, although you may not be able to perceive externally, plants also, if you put a very light music, plants grow very nicely. If you put a harsh music, plants dry up. In America, they conducted experiments with plants. So, living bodies exhibit these emotions, it can be very easily understood. This ability to think, feel, and will is there only in a living body, where the soul is present. So, when soul is absent, there are no emotions. With any amount of endeavor, we can never bring about emotions. I was reading one scientist says, he was trying to make artificial semen by which he wanted to create life. The artificial semen looked exactly like the male semen. So he thought, now everything is done. He saw the structure. It looked exactly like male semen. Everything. But then after making all these things, ultimately he said, it could not produce life. He said, everything was there. But I could see clearly that the life was missing out of my hands and it was badly left with some atoms and molecules. This was the word of the scientist. It was the famous quotation by one Nobel laureate. So in this way, you can make a body exactly similar to human body. In one of the California, in one of the Los Angeles exhibitions, one scientist kept in different beakers, different chemicals that are present in the human body. He kept all the different chemicals present and he put a question at the top. He asked, with all these chemicals, can you produce life? This question was asked by a scientist. Although you have all the chemicals available with you in the world, but combining all of them in even proper proportions, you will not be able to make life. It is impossible. Because life comes from the soul. In fact, the matter grows upon the soul. Without the soul, the matter cannot even grow. The matter will simply decompose and decay. As you see in the case of a dead body. As soon as the soul leaves the body, the red color blood turns into white. The metabolism stops, the heartbeat stops, the body doesn't function any longer. Why? Why could the body not continue for all time to come? Body could not continue. So the body is just a vehicle by which the soul is manifesting all its activities. But actually, we should be very clear about this point, that in these machines we can never bring about emotion. Like the creator said, cogito ergo sum. I am aware that I am existing. All of you here are aware that you all are existing. This awareness is absent in the machine. Computer can never say, computer at birth. I am a computer. Good morning. He can write good morning in the screen. You can program him to say so. But he cannot exhibit any emotions. So they are playing with the material nature and doing many things and trying to cheat people. Like you give a command file in a computer, you can keep on saying good morning, or thank you, welcome, welcome, you can say anything. Only a person from a rustic place, a villager may wonder, how is it saying? Or you can program a machine to say, good morning, good morning, good morning, can do anything. But the intelligent, educated man knows that there are no emotions. Even the robots that are made, as human beings, they even speak. They set up a speaker inside, there is a sound system inside, everything is available. When they speak to each other, when they put hands on each other's shoulders, so you control all of them with a microprocessor. What is absent in that? Emotions are not there. Consciousness is not there. but they never bring about. So the foolish scientists, they are thinking that the chemicals are producing the consciousness. They are thinking when you are angry, some chemicals are secreted in the body. So they are thinking, oh, if you secrete the chemicals, then anger will come. Is it possible? You make a robot and you make the robot secrete some chemicals in one portion of his body. Can it become angry? This is foolishness. Foolishness to the core. Actually, you may become angry and chemicals may be secreted. It's true. We don't deny that. We don't say that the Shastras are saying, no, there can't be any secretion of chemicals. We don't say that. Chemicals can be secreted. There's no problem in that. In fact, God has created the body in such a way that when you become angry, then some chemicals should be secreted by which you can get some good diseases in the body. Similarly, when you have different emotions, he secretes different chemicals to cause you different types of diseases. So God is using it as a tool to give you some suffering and pleasure through the agency of the chemicals. But simply mere secretion of the chemicals cannot bring about any kind of emotion. This is such a common sense. So this has to be properly understood. As regards to soul and super soul, Krishna says in the section of Bhagavatam where we talk about where he talks about the glory of devotees. Sadhavo hridayam mahyam sadhvanam hridayam paham adanyatena jananti aham tevya managati. He says, I am situated in the heart of my devotee and the devotee is situated in my heart. I cannot think of anything but my devotee and my devotees cannot think anything but me. So what does it actually mean? This means the chitta, all of us have a chitta. In our chitta heart, the Lord's promise presence. Premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena santatta deva hridayeshu vilokayanti. That hridayeshu is actually the chitta of the devotee. So in our heart, the Lord is present. In whatever form you are worshipping, as Krishna or Narasimha or Vamana or Vishnu, in that form the Lord is present. Similarly, in Lord's heart, the devotee is present. As far as the soul and super soul are concerned, the soul and super soul are sitting next to one another. And at the time of liberation, when one gets liberated from this world and goes back to the spiritual world, what happens to the super soul? The super soul remains in this world only. He doesn't go back to the soul. In fact, it's not that the super soul is there only in your heart. The super soul is there in every atom. In your body there may be billions of atoms. And so there are millions of super souls. In every atom, in the middle of the nucleus, in every atom, there is a super soul because of whom the atom is performing its functions. For protons and neutrons and all that, there are electrons evolving. All this is going on only because of the presence of the super soul. Similarly, in this body there are crores of souls. Not that there is only one soul. There may be so many worms may be there, so many different types of things may be there in this body. Bacteria, virus may be there. But there is one predominant soul. Just like if you are living in a room like this. In the same room along with you, there may be some rats living, some cockroaches living, isn't it? If you are not keeping your room clean, isn't it? But you are the predominant soul living in that room. You understand this point? Similarly, in this body there is one predominant soul, which is you. And along with you there may be many other souls, and there are millions of super souls in the body. But along with the soul, which is you, there is a super soul, which is sitting by your side, who is constantly guiding you, who is waiting to award you knowledge. So then you turn to him, so he awards you knowledge. Soul. Soul is there literally everywhere in the universe. That's why when we talk of cloning, people ask about cloning. How nowadays we are producing people from just by taking one small part of the body, by taking from a cell, they are creating new beings. How is it possible? When we devotees heard it, it was no wonder for us when we heard about it. Why? Because in this body there are crores of souls. If you take one drop of water, there are millions of souls in one drop of water. You know? If you just drink the water, and rice, you keep it closed, after which you will find so many types of living beings coming from that. So how are they able to come? Because there are innumerable souls all over the universe. In this air, there are millions of souls. In water, there are millions of souls. So they are taking a portion of the body and creating some living being, but there is only soul present, there is no wonder for them to create. So the soul is called Sarvagatha. He is present in every part of the universe. But soul being transcendental, we cannot see him with our eyes. But the soul, after having been awarded with the body, he starts manifesting his activities and consciousness. Why should we rely on the Vedas? Vedas are on one hand and the science is on the other hand. They can clearly 100% prove that the scientific knowledge is relative. If at all you are giving some better knowledge, it is only a better relative truth. Better imperfect relative truth. If you are giving a very wonderful knowledge and you are very confident through science, then that is the best relative knowledge that you can give. There can never be absolute knowledge. It is impossible with science. Because with the human body, if you see the eyes, humans have far more powerful eyes than us. They can see millions of, they can see several miles away. Or if you take the dog, the olfactory function of the dog, the smelling ability of the dog is thousands of times greater than the human being. But now you are sitting here, you cannot smell what is there near the gate, isn't it? The dog can immediately perceive. Similarly, the animals have ability to hear very, very wide range of frequencies than human beings. Our ability is only 20 hertz to 20 kilohertz. But you know the ultrasonic whistle? With the ultrasonic whistle, all the rats will run away because they can hear it. Our dog's whistle, you cannot hear. The other range is very limited. But with this human body, which is limited in every sense, except that it is awarded with a special ability to understand God. That is the only special prerogative. So in whichever body, whatever special prerogative is allotted to you, if you expand it to the best of your ability, then you can achieve success. For example, elephant, his best ability is to eat. So he can become a hero by eating. He can show the entire world, see, what a great hero am I. But I am eating tons of food every day. Isn't it? Similarly, eagle is a hero in what? In seeing long distances. He can challenge others, isn't it? Can you see like me? Possible. Similarly, dog. Even the big policemen and sages, they are dependent on a dog. They are carrying the rock. Please come and help me. I am unable to find the thief. So dog is certainly a hero in the platform of smelling. Certainly is glorious. But we human beings, what is our glory? Or the pigeons, they will be heroes in having sex life. Or if you take mosquito, within a short time they can produce hundreds and thousands of so many mosquitoes. Very quickly they expand. You have seen that? How quickly? But as human beings, we try to imitate these animals and say, I can also produce like you. Can you compete with that? Can you compete with a frog or a mosquito in producing? Or can you compete with the eagle in seeing? Can you compete with the frog in smelling? We have only one special ability. What is it? God realization, which none of these people can do. All these animals cannot do. So, God is so kind that in every body he is awarding some special prerogative. And in human body he has awarded this, so he has given the special prerogative. That we should utilize to understand the ultimate goal of life. Are there any questions unanswered?
Sir,
I didn't complete this answer. I was trying to compare about science and the Vedas. Isn't it? So I was telling that we can easily show that all of the scientific knowledge is fallacious. Because some 4 centuries ago, we never knew about the microbes. Is it not? In the 6th century, they found out the electron microscope and many of the microscopes. Then we could detect the microbes like bacteria and virus. But before that, we never knew about such a living organisms. In the same way, there are many things in nature which you are still not yet aware with our limited human senses. And even if you use instruments, still you can only stretch yourself to a little more extent, that's all. For example, if you take any instrument, it has got a resolution power, is it not? Is there any instrument without any resolution that it can detect anything from lower to upper limits? There is no machine like that. As soon as you buy an instrument, it has a resolution power. But what about those things which are below the resolution power? Like if you take even a SEM or a TEM. Below that there are so many kinds of things existing which we cannot see. Similarly, in the big way also, if you see, the universe is so big that we cannot even understand what is out there. Similarly, there are things that are so tiny that we cannot understand them. So with human senses and with extended senses, namely the instruments, you still will not be able to arrive at the absolute truth. So when you are sure 100% that you cannot arrive at the absolute truth with science, then why should you waste your time? On the other hand, there is Vedas which claim that we can provide you complete knowledge, perfect knowledge. In the beginning, we do not know what the Vedas are saying is true or not. How do we know? How can we put faith? Just like you go to the college and you put faith in the professor, he gives you a book, he reads his book. Immediately you take the book. When you take a electrical engineering book, you open the book, do you have any doubts? Of course, you may have many doubts, but you read the book and understand first. You don't question the professor. You don't say, no, 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 I will not open any book. I am going to find out what is electricity. So there is a do from the beginning. So the start, like how Faraday did. Are you going to do that? First you accept some reference book which has been researched by earlier scientists. Similarly, you want to know about the ultimate truth. There are so many scriptures like Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, which are already prescribed the books for you. You don't have to research. You read them, understand them, try to practice what they tell you. And after you understand and practice, then you achieve a very highly exalted position. Then you can start giving a realization. But in the beginning, one should accept these books. It's very essential. So we accept the Vedas because, as we were telling, we are Apurusheya, but beyond these four human defects. No human being is capable of giving you the ultimate truth. It's not possible. Even me, I can't give you the absolute truth. But how am I confidently speaking? So how am I speaking so confidently? Because I have received the truth from someone who has heard from another person, and ultimately knowledge comes from the Lord Himself. So the Vedas are self-authoritative and they claim to be authoritative. And you hear them, understand them and practice them, gradually you will come to realization. You realize everything that they say. So Vedas are the only body of knowledge which you can confidently accept. All other knowledge given by science may be probably very useful for filling up our belly because you need a job or you can get some intellectual pleasure. Science has done so many things. You can play some video games. You can do some such things by which you can get some mental pressure or intellectual pressure, or it may be helpful in finding a good job for you. But they cannot fix the needs of the soul. It's impossible. The soul is suffering in this body. But you should be able to understand what is this true culture. You know, Bhagavan Krishna, that's a very nice story. He says, one man was a very, very skinny man, very hungry. He was leaning against a big pillar. He was leaning against it. And he was very hungry for food. So with his both hands embracing the pillar, he was asking people, please give me some food. I'm very, very weak. Please give me some food. He was asking like that. So nobody was giving. People were passing by. And this fellow was very, very weak. So one gentleman wanted to give him some popcorn. Had two handfuls of popcorn. But he told him, oh, poor man. First of all, you come out of the pillar so that I can offer you the popcorn. He said, no, you please just give me here and here like this. So he was embracing the pillar. So if he is taking the popcorn, can he eat it? So of course he got the popcorn in hand. He was trying like this and trying like this. Trying to eat it, he could not eat it because of the pillar. In the same way, this pillar is compared to the blind faith that you have developed in science. Because you have so much blind faith in science, you don't want to give up that. Holding on to that, you are saying, okay, tell me something about God, let me see. You don't want to give up this blind faith. You don't want to put complete faith in God and the Vedas. When you give up the pillar and you show your both hands, then the man can eat the popcorn. He can become very healthy and happy. Similarly, the soul is suffering in this world because of attachments. But if he is ready to give up the foolish, nonsensical material attachments and accept the mercy of the Lord coming through the Vedas, then he can gain complete benefit. Vedas example, he spoke very wonderfully, gave a good answer. You all have heard of strain energy? You know, strain energy must study in your first year. Strain energy means it's stored elastic energy. You must have seen whenever the lizard catches a prey, he twists his tail, you see? Tick, 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 whenever he twists his tail. So a lot of energy is stored in that. When he falls on the top of a rafter, then the tail may get cut. But all the strain energy is stored, something like a torque spring, like we have in an alarm clock, we have in a clock, torque spring, wood clock. So you have a spring which is coming out in the same way. There is strain energy stored in the tail. That is coming out. There is no soul in the tail. Soul is in the main body only. And as far as merging, in the Supreme Buddhist concept, you never merge. That's a clear understanding. there is Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. So who was the question on God? Should I answer in Hindi or in English? Aapko Hindi mein batao? English? Aap Hindi mein batao? English, you understand English?
No,
okay. So he raised a very good question. 99% of the people in India, those who are so-called religious people, they have the idea that ultimately everything merges into some light. This is the understanding. But the Shastras very clearly tell us that the absolute truth exists in three phases: Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. Just like the sun and the sunlight. Sun planet has a form, is it not? But there is sunlight outside. The same way, God is personal and impersonal, both. Like the tube light. From the bulb, there is so much light pervading the entire room. That is impersonal. But the bulb has a form. In the same way, the Supreme Truth ultimately is a person, is a personality. You can understand easily that we all are persons. When all of us are persons and we have senses to account, then how can the Supreme God not have senses? The ultimate truth should have everything that is within our experience and beyond our experience. So if God has to be complete, he should be both personal and impersonal. So the impersonal aspect is the Brahma Jyoti, into which the jnanis want to merge. But after they go and merge, how do they merge? Merging is something like a parrot that is entering into a tree. The parrot is green and the tree is green. So when the parrot goes into the tree, it appears everything has become one. But is the parrot having individuality or not? One is individuality. So when the jnanis go to the Brahman, and now they think, Om Shanti Shanti Shanti, I have become merged with the Brahman, they think like that. But they are not merged, they maintain their individuality. That's the shloka in Bhagavatam, it says, Kyanye aravindakshan muktamanina panyat prabhavada vishuddha buddhaya arushya dasrena param padam takaha patan divadora dhriti yushpadangraya. It says, arushya dasrena param padam takaha. For achieving this Brahman, they perform penance for thousands of years and they go to the Brahma Jyoti, which is the effulgence of the spiritual sky. Just like the sun is emanating light, similarly, in the spiritual sky, Paravyoma, there is infinite effulgence. In that there are planets floating, Vaikuntha planets, where the Lord is existing in various forms, as Keshava, Narayana, Madhava, Govinda, so many forms. And Krishna also is eternally existing in the spiritual world in one of the planets. Some people think Krishna has come and gone, Lord Ramachandra has come and gone, that means they are finished, they are thinking. They are never finished. These forms of Krishna, Rama, all these forms are eternal, and they all are existing in the spiritual sky. Avatar means one who descends, like from 10-story building you may come down, you may buy some things in the market, then again you may go back to 10-story building, the top. So the Lord comes to the spiritual world here, performs some activities and he again goes back to the spiritual world and he eternally resides there. And he performs various pastimes, like he was asking what happens to us after death. What happens to us after death? After death, if you are a pure devotee, you return to the spiritual world, where you perform eternal pastimes in the Supreme world. Every day is a day of joy. It says in the spiritual world, every person is so sweet and nectarian. There is nobody who is envious of you. In this material world you see everyone is envious. Everyone is greedy. But in spiritual world everyone is very loving. Similarly, every word they speak is like a song. It's like a song. And every walk, every gait is compared to dance. Nobody walks in the spiritual world. They are always dancing and moving. And all water is nectar, and fruit is a favorite attendant. So in this way, there is a description about the spiritual world. What is spiritual world? Spiritual world is also something like a material world. There are trees, there are plants, there are rivers, there are cows, there are cows, there are gopis, there are gopas, there is Krishna, and there are his covered boyfriends, there are pastures, there are cows are gazing. And in this way, Krishna is performing variegated pastimes with his loving consorts, as well as with his loving friends and with his parents and others, and that is the real home. That is our eternal relationship, which can never be broken. Now what you have come here, is it broken? It's not broken. It is just hidden. When you go and revive that relationship back, you can again re-establish it. So that is our original home. You want to go back to the spiritual world. But this material world is a temporary place, where you have started grasping false relationships. Unfortunately, this is just an imitation. This is not the true world. This is just a pratibimba, reflection. Just like in a mango tree, there is a beautiful mango, original mango. If you eat that mango, you will get real happiness. But the same mango is reflecting in the water. You dive into the water, what will happen? You will only break your head. You can never achieve any sweetness of the mango. Similarly, in this world, we are trying to establish relationships and trying to get some happiness. People are squeezing out this body to get happiness. And nothing is happening. They are becoming more and more miserable. The more you try to enjoy, the more you become miserable in this world. Because this is false world. It's not a true world. When you imagine that there is happiness in this world, that's a great misfortune. Because you are imagining something that is not available here. That's right. Bhagavan Sarasi gives a beautiful story. He says, one time, the crane was trying to catch a fish in water. But he thought, oh, I have to work so hard to get this fish from the water. And fish is not coming in my grasp, in my beak. So he was looking around and he found a bull from whose behind he saw in between the two legs the testicles were hanging. So he saw the testicles and thought that this is a fish. And he was wondering, oh, the fish is so easily available. Why should I struggle hard in the water? Let me get this fish. So he went nearby and started catching the testicles, sinking into the fish. And he got a kick on that. He got a big kick on his beak. I'm getting a kick. It was so painful. Why did I get a kick? When I'm trying to catch a fish, why should I get a kick? He didn't understand. Again he went and tried again to catch a fish. Again he got another kick. Because you are trying to enjoy something that is illusory. It is actually not the fish. Actual fish is in the water. In the same way, the real where you lead the same spiritual life, like the people are leading in the spiritual life. Like all of us are coming here and assembling. We are talking about Krishna, we are talking about the Atma, we are talking about the relationship, and we are doing chanting Hare Krishna. Whatever is going on in the spiritual world, same thing we are doing here. We are just doing the same thing. Then you can get happiness. Like today, many of you went for Harinam Sankirtan. This is the activity of the spiritual world. So by doing this activity, eating prasadam is the activity in the spiritual world. Isn't it? So in this way, you perform the same activities what is going on in the spiritual world here, then this, in this world itself, you will find a great joy. Then you can become free from suffering. Then there are no more kicks on your nose. Like the crane, foolish crane was getting kicks. Then you can get real happiness. So ultimately, as was very beautifully explaining the example of the fish entering into the ocean, similarly we all go to spiritual world and we maintain our identities. And Krishna has his identity. And we reciprocate love. What is going on in the spiritual world is a loving competition between the Lord and his devotees. And we are trying to imitate this loving competition in the material world. Like a boy and a girl. Boy tries to serve the girl. And girl tries to serve the boy. And they are thinking in this loving competition they will enjoy. But actually they are not serving. They are exploiting. A boy thinks, if I marry this girl, she is very beautiful. She will give me a lot of sense gratification. The girl thinks, oh, this man comes from a good family. He has a good job. If I marry him, he will give me good ornaments and good dresses to wear and he will give me a good house. So everyone is thinking of his own selfish or her own selfish motives only in this world. So the loving, so-called loving competition of this world has no true significance at all. It is simply a mithya. It is false. And even if you love someone at the core of your heart and you say, no, 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 really this love is like a divine love. You may say like that, you don't understand. I really have loved so much. How long can that love last? It is simply like a clash in the time span of eternity. What is eternity? How many number of years? Infinite number of years. In that years, your period of 8 years of so-called love is only a flash. It will vanish. It is simply an imagination. So we should try to repose our love on Krishna. This is our true nature. Now it doesn't appear to be our true nature because we are covered. Just like iron when it is covered with dust, it doesn't appear to be iron at all. So you have to remove all the dust and dirt. You have to turn it in a lathe. Then you can see the iron. In the same way, we all are covered now with so much of dust and dirt. That is why we are chanting Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.
This is a cleansing process. By this you can cleanse, and you will see that you fall in love with Krishna spontaneously. That will happen. When one chants sincerely, gradually one's loving attraction for Krishna will increase. And then not only Krishna, along with Krishna you will see that in the spiritual world, all the eternal living beings in the spiritual world will be gradually revealed to you. And you will understand what is the spiritual world, what is spiritual pleasure. Then compared to that spiritual pleasure, the worldly pleasure will look pale and insignificant. Just like if you have a beautiful plate full of varieties of delicious preparations, sweets and, of course today is Ekadashi, you must have got a simple prasad. But otherwise, you can have so many varieties of nice delicious prasad. And if somebody offers you sukha roti, will you ever bother about it? You throw it away. Similarly, in this world there are so many types of pleasures available which we think are very great, but they are insignificant compared to spiritual pleasure. So we don't merge into God. Even the jnanis who merge into Brahman, they fall again, patantiyado, anadritishmadangriha. Just like a rocket which goes into the sky, which has no place to land, again it returns back to the earth. In the same way, the jnanis go to the Brahman, and Brahman means they are not going into any planet. They are just staying in the Brahmajyoti for several years. They return back to this material world. Again in want of some activity. And again they do activity and then ultimately they become a bhakta. Then they can go into spiritual world. All of you are clear about this? So this concept is very clearly said in Shastra. There is no question of merging because the soul cannot be cleaved. Just like if you take this paper and tear it into several pieces, and if you can make the paper into one again, that means you are going against the knowledge that is given in the scripture. It is going against the law that is given in the scripture. Krishna says the soul is uncleavable, is it not? He says nayanam chintanti. That means you cannot cut the super soul. According to them, Brahman is the super soul, isn't it? How can you cut it into several pieces? Or how can you put them back into one unit again? So, and even if one assumes that the fragmental parts are actually thinking they are fragmental, but they are actually the ultimate Brahman only, to think like that, still the ultimate Brahman cannot come under the illusion Maya. As we are talking about the Bahiranga Shakti of the Lord, we all are suffering in this world. Adhyatmi kati bhavati kati daivi ka klesha. So, if you go into Mayavad discussion, it's a very elaborate topic to discuss. There is no end. You can go on and on. But for this session, it is suffice to say that the soul has its own individuality. A beautiful sloka he quoted. Satya vaham jatanasam. Krishna says, I am an individual, the soul is an individual, everyone is an individual. And we all remain individuals for eternity. We never merge into one another. So this should be clearly understood. So, Vaishnavas talk about oneness. What kind of oneness? Just like if you have gold, the earrings, the nose rings, the necklace, or the anklets, everything, whatever you are having, they all are made of gold. So there is oneness in quality. All are gold. But in gold there is variety. Within gold there is variety. In the same way, the spiritual world, Krishna's body is Sachidananda, your body is Sachidananda, the plant's body, the river's body, the cow's body, everything is Sachidananda. Eternity, knowledge and bliss. But then there is individuality and variety. This is our philosophy. But according to Mayavadis, everything is one substance. That is Mayavad philosophy. So, scriptures very clearly explain to us that there is spiritual variegatedness. Mukti hitva anyata rupam swarupyana javasthiti. The real meaning of mukti or liberation is to resituate oneself in his own swarupa. We all have a swarupa. In that swarupa we have to resituate ourselves. Any other questions? Chajimpa? Yeah.
Guruji,
you said dimensional movement. Yeah.
So,
elevate
to next body, higher.
Yeah, correct. So,
is there any particular
sequence
like
where you need
to use
the
body?
Yeah. There is a sequence also, but when one falls down from a human species, depending on, he doesn't have to go through all the animal species again. For example, if he has about 20 diseases, then he may take 20 different forms to fulfill those particular diseases, and then again he will come back to human body. Because as many diseases you have, as many bodies are available in this material creation, and you will be awarded those bodies.
sequence or?
No, we are not doing sequence. Generally, only one thing is said, that when the living being is in the body of a cow, then the cow is in the body of goodness, then he may get a human body, an elevated human body. Or if somebody is in the body of a monkey, somebody is in the body of a donkey, it's in ignorance. Similarly, tiger and lion is in passion. So from these bodies, when one becomes human being, then one's gunas are also determined based on that, like that. But one need not take all the bodies again. I think it's quite late, we will do 5 minutes kirtan and mind up. I'm very thankful to all of you for giving our valuable time this Saturday evening. This is one of the best presentations we have heard in our IVAS meetings, Ajay Mani's presentation. Because Ajay Mani, you all should know about him. He is an MBA from which college?
IBMR
College. After that, he is now currently working with PC software. So he has been giving his time for teaching children in schools. Like when he goes to a particular school to teach world education, there are hundreds of children sitting and hearing. So Ajay Mani gave a class several months ago. Now we are hearing him. There is so much change. You see, because he has been practicing, giving to children and teaching to others also. So this is the beauty of this program. The first time you speak, you may have little fear. You may have a stage fright. But as time progresses, you will learn to speak boldly. Sometimes everyone is fearful of facing 2-3 people. But then you will learn to face some 2-3,000 people. And regularly speak Krishna consciousness to others. And when you speak, Krishna gives you very special mercy. If you go and tell whatever you are hearing to others also, then Krishna says, you become very dear to him. Achitasmat manushyesu kashchinne priyatmatamah. He says, you become very dear to me because you are spreading this knowledge to others. It's not just keeping it to yourself. Then you can become very, very dear to Krishna. So please keep on attending these programs regularly every Saturday and you can ask more and more and feel free to ask questions. And in this way we can progress in our understanding. We can become deeper and deeper in our understanding. After that, wherever you go in the world, nobody can defeat you. You will have perfect knowledge. What to speak of being defeated by others, that is a secondary thing. First of all, we should be convinced ourselves of what we are practicing. Only then you can be a happy man. You cannot be a duplicitous man, have something inside and something outside. You have to be, whatever is there inside should come out. So you should be confident yourself. Then with full conviction you can give others. If you don't have conviction, then you will always be timid. You will be practicing Krishna consciousness. Some people put kantimala. When they see the sun, they do their collar like this. Keep it inside. Please do not see my kantimala. Please don't think I am a devotee. I can also behave like you. I can also come to movie with you. So they are afraid of declaring that they are devotee. Why? Where is the fear coming from? Fear is because they are themselves not convinced. So we should first of all become strongly convinced ourselves. We should know clearly what you are doing is perfect. And in this way, hearing more and more and practicing more and more, you can become very powerful understanding. Then you will get the Krishna Shakti, with which you can lead a happy life throughout your life. And then the Vaikuntha airplane is awaiting you. At the point of death, the Lord will take you back to Godhead. At the same time, you can give others boldly this knowledge without any fear or shyness. Thank you very much. Hello. I am very thankful to all of you for participating in the Harinam Sankirtan led by Premil Prabhu and Mukundanand Prabhu and Amodra also? No. Shivaram Prabhu. So next time we all will try to join. I'm very sorry for not joining all of you. Because of Ekadashi I was feeling little weak. Next week you all come, we will go in a big larger number. We should have something like 100 people. You can go for half an hour. You can come back and have a meeting. How many of you like the Harinam Sankirtan? Oh! Wonderful. So it's a big number. So this is a affirmation given to us that we should continue Harinam every time. So if you can come possibly by 6:30, isn't it? 6:30? 6 o'clock. You can come. Yeah, if you can come at 6 o'clock, then I was meeting can start at 7. Then everything can end by about 9. Then you can leave back early and you can reach back early. Otherwise it becomes too late. So I will do just 5 minutes kirtan and then we can discuss. Correct. Mm-hmm. Krishna Hare 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 Hare